Then I'll.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. Welcome to the program, Lincoln on Lending, where we think we do our best at bringing you the latest of what's going on in the industry. Today is Monday, May 3rd, and we welcome you to the program. As we do each and every week, we go to and turn to the rates. I just remembered, I forgot to introduce the fact that we have a guest talking today with us today. Again, Glenn Corso is back with us, and we're going to be talking about the very critical and crucial topic of what's happening in on the Hill related to Senate Bill 3217, Restoring America's Financial Stability, which has skin in the game in it. And we're going to be talking about that in the Hot Topic segment. But let's get back now and get talking about interest rates. Joe, welcome to the program. Give us a rundown on what's happening today.
Thanks, mate. I can't wait to hear the discussion later on, because that can be a game changer. I mean, that's a big, big deal. I've written my senators.
Well, I mean,
Dave, the market's down a little bit. Over the weekend, the issues regarding the debt in Greece were, I don't know if you can say they were resolved, but a deal was worked out, and they're getting some $146 billion worth of support. And so we're seeing that this morning markets opened a little lower as a result of that, in that the market had factored in a little bit of a flight to quality, as especially last week on Tuesday when the debt was downgraded. And what we saw this morning is just a little reversal of that. But then we also saw some pretty good economic news this morning. Yeah. Good for the economy, not so good for mortgage rates. But the ISM came out for April. It's significant in that it's really the first measure. Of course, we're just two days into the month, but it's the first measure of economic activity for April. And it was better than expected. In fact, the measure for ISM, it's just a number, but it's relative to that, prior measures. It came in at 60.4, and this is the first time in over 5 years that we've had a measure at 60. Now, the ISM measure is for the rate of expansion. So it's not an absolute term, so it's not like we're at the best economic activity in 5 years, but the rate of expansion of the economic activity is the best it's been in a very long time. So that was a good measure for the economy this morning, but and consequently the stock market's up, but mortgage rates, mortgage prices are down just a little bit. We also saw personal income came in March, for March over February, a little bit of a growth, which was good to see. And construction spending was a growth, although residential construction spending was down a bit. We're seeing a little reaction and association with the home buyer tax credit there, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Last week was a nice week for mortgage rates. They fell a little bit. Again, the big driver, as I mentioned earlier, was Greece and their issues. We saw on Tuesday the debt was downgraded, and the market for mortgages improved significantly, about 18-30 seconds, as people got out of investments in not only Greece, but some of the other European government debt, and sought the relative safety of U.S. debt. So,
flight to quality again. Yep.
Mortgage prices improved, and That was good for on Tuesday anyway. And then the Fed meeting minutes were announced, and that was one of the there's almost no reaction to what was said in the Fed minutes. No surprises. The Friday before, there'd been some discussion or an announcement, or a story was broken by CNBC that said that a number of the Fed governors that would be meeting and voting on policy had decided or had come out in favor of selling the MBS purchase. The purchase or the MBS portfolio sooner rather than later, and so I was looking for, and I'm sure the market was wondering if any mention of that would be made, and as it was, no mention of the MBS portfolio was mentioned or was made, and just no surprises at all. Last week, we saw Treasury auctions go off fairly well. Basically all received average grades, and saw the first look at GDP, which was showed a growth in the first quarter over the fourth quarter, 3.2% rate of growth, just about exactly where people had expected. This week is going to be pretty much driven by the jobs report, Friday morning, 8:30. The April jobs report will come out. Consensus is that there will be about almost 200,000, 190,000 jobs created. And the critical part of that is the number of jobs that are associated with the census workers, the number of people hired to fill census worker jobs. And, that's anticipated to be about half of the 190,000-200,000 jobs. You might remember last month when the March jobs report came out in early April, the market saw that had expected 190,000 jobs, and 162 came out. Usually that'd be a sign of weakness in the jobs report, but as it was, the number of census workers expected to get to the 190 was not anywhere near what came in, and so the 162,000 jobs was really a pretty good report, and the market sold off on that news. But besides the jobs report next week, we have pending home sales for March, and we've seen new home sales and existing home sales. All the home sales activity has kind of been up. Pending home sales for the last couple of months have been up, and I guess that says the home buyer tax credit is working. But the numbers for March should show a good one. Numbers for April should show a good one. Kind of don't want to think about what might happen in May, but that's still a ways away. So. Dave, if you're there.
I am here. I don't know if I'm coming through all right.
You.
But yeah, well, I'm here, but I'm not here. So I don't know sure
what
exactly
you're
going to.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Andy, tell everybody I need to dial back in. Go to a break. Oh, all right. Okay. Joe can't hear me, but I guess everybody else can. I apologize for that. We seem to be having some technology issues related to the audio broadcast. So we are going to continue on. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at mbsquoteline.com.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back, everybody. We're rolling right along here. I love those technology glitches along there, but we're rolling back on into the legislative update, and boy, we've got so much to talk about with what's going on. We're going to be talking in the hot segment and the hot topic segment about restoring the American financial stability. Again, we're going to have Glenn Corso on in that segment. Stay tuned. Alice, take it away. What is going on in the traffic report?
Oh, it's crazy, Dave. I mean, as you mentioned, we're going to have Glenn here again because there's so much to go through in talking about that Restoring American Financial Stability Act. What I do want to at least let everyone know at this point in our legislative update is simply that they did finally get it passed so that it'll be taken, get the vote to essentially move it into the debate phase. So that happened, did finally happen last week after our call, and we'll be watching for that starting this week. And so that's what we've got Glenn on the show for, to really kind of dive into what you have to be prepared for and what we can all do to get the message through to Congress or to our senators at this point to make sure that the skin in the game provision in there is gets plenty of attention. So I'm going to move on to the other bills that we're watching. We have a new bill. There actually was a new bill added last week that basically picked up several pieces we've already been watching for you with FHA reform. So House Bill 5072, that's our new number to watch. House Bill 5072 had a voice vote about the 27th last week to pass this. It's called the FHA Reform Act of 2010. Now, over the last many months, we've been watching several FHA bills. This essentially pulls out several of the key pieces that they wanted to get through. So I'm going to focus on giving you an update on what's included in this. You know, it's 18 pages, but it's got a lot of stuff in it. So this bill
only
formalizes...
18 pages?
I know. I got through that in a heartbeat this morning. Compared to those 15 ones, I'm going, wow, this is a piece of cake. I can handle this. Where's my highlighter? So so with this particular one, it formalizes the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Risk Management. This is the one that has the increase in the annual upfront MIP. Originally, I think Secretary Donovan wanted to get this up to 1.75. It's actually just going to be 1.55. Now, don't panic. That's not what's going to happen. This isn't passed yet. It still has to go through the Senate, but the House version is just simply allowing the Secretary to have authority up to a 1.55 annual MIP premium. There's definitely additional funding for the staff, which we all want FHA to have, but it also is going to give the Secretary authority to increase down payment requirements. Now, if you remember in a previous bill, there was change FHA to be a 5% down program. That's what's gone. What we got instead was that there is now going to be an extensive study that has to be done on the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund, and then the Secretary will be obligated to tie down payment requirements if the fund starts to become in trouble. So very wide open, certainly no immediate change to any FHA down payment requirements, even if this thing does pass, but we'll have to watch it very closely, that the wording gives us a confidence level that we'll know, you know, that FHA isn't going to become a 20% down program. So we're certainly watching this one. The Secretary is going to they're proposing in this legislation that they'll be using your NMLS number to track everything. So they're going to want even the bank entities to get an ID number. We'll see how that ultimately pans out, but the idea of FHA now using your NMLS ID number, I'm assuming even at the loan officer level, they're going to try and capture that data as well as the company level. As far as some other pieces, a lot of them are really technical in nature in terms of FHA enforcement. They're going to have broad-ranging indemnification capabilities for all DE lenders. In other words, if you make mistakes in one area, they could come in and shut you down in all areas. It's no longer just geographically tied. So that's some of the high points of the big things that they're proposing in this particular bill. We also, you know, I'm not so sure we want to necessarily be the rumor mill here, but we're certainly watching to see if FHA is going to extend this deadline. You know, May 20th is the official date as of now for when the lender approval requirements go into effect. We're not sure if FHA is ready to flip that switch so fast. So just, I guess, a heads up to watch for, is there a possibility that the FHA lender approval changes may get extended? In terms of other bills, we're watching quite a slew of them. I actually have about six or seven of them that we're watching. none of them certainly as critical as what we're going to be talking about later today. So I'm going to save the time for that. I think that was our plan. Is that correct, Dave?
That is
time
correct.
For
yes.
Giving one. So I guess I just want to wrap up with the only new thing that really hit last week too was the EPA changed lead-based paint requirements. You know, we don't have enough to worry about already. Now there's a new issue with lead paint on older homes, and underwriters and loan officers and realtors seem to be a little concerned about what do they have to do with this. But there are new requirements that lead paint has to get more closely scrutinized on older homes, and a new certification is required now on this going forward. So just, you know, check the internet and make sure you know what you got to do for that. And then so the next deadline creeping up is red flags rules due by June 1st. I don't think this is going to get extended again, so be ready for that one.
That's an important one, yes.
I'll stop there. I have a whole laundry list here. I think we want to make sure we have time to talk about everything going on.
We could go on and on and on. There is so much going on in this. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this quick word to talk with Glenn Corso about this
mortgage trading and consulting company to fit exactly what you need. Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. There is so much going on in the industry. I mean, tell you, there's game-changing legislation. Nothing more significant than Senate Bill 3217 related to restoring American financial stability. And there's few people that are on the front line as effective, and at least we're hoping he is very effective in his group, but they're certainly working hard on the front line of this issue. Welcome to the program today, Glenn Corso, who is the Managing Director of Community Mortgage Banking Project. He is formerly a Senior Vice President for the PMI Group. We're our new sponsor. Great to have him on the program. Glenn, he's 33 years in the industry, mortgage banking experience, wide range of background, and we're just thrilled to have you back, Glenn. You don't really need much of an introduction anymore. You've become a regular, and we're grateful to have you here. Glenn, bring us up to date on what has happened here this last week.
Well, Dave, as Alice was telling everyone, the Senate last week began consideration of S-3217, and they started talking about it on Thursday, and then they're going to take it up again tomorrow. And what we're anticipating is that the Senate will be both debating the bill and considering amendments to the bill probably at least for the next 1 to 2 weeks and maybe even a bit longer than that. There's been a great many amendments filed, and they affect various parts of the bill. And we expect those to be taken up one at a time. And so it's going to stretch the process for a little while. Now, of course, this is a very comprehensive bill. This bill contains, among other things, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. They've made it a part of the Federal Reserve now. It'll be actually a bureau within the Federal Reserve.
Wow.
But that agency has very sweeping powers. Many of the current regulations that mortgage bankers have to deal with today will be transferred over to the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. For example, RESPA and Truth in Lending and things like that. They'll be taken from the agencies that administer them now and moved over to this new bureau in the Federal Reserve. And then in addition, this bureau will have pretty sweeping authority to regulate unfair and deceptive acts and practices in the financial world with respect to consumers. So pretty broad authority there.
That's, and of course, I was going to say, on the broad authorities, is any read on that? When you hear a government agency, especially in light of this administration's focus, it seems to be, does the broad authority, is that create new concerns for you, Glenn?
Well, it does, in the sense that, of course, you're going to have an agency now that is going to be very focused on carrying out their mission. And I think that there is, there's a large contingent of people in Washington who feel that consumers were led down the garden path, particularly in the mortgage industry or in the mortgage world, by lenders that originated loans that really the consumers had no chance for success. Now, there are others on the other side who say, well, you know, the consumers should have informed themselves. They should have made their own decision about whether or not they could deal with the terms of these loans, particularly once these loans got past the initial period and there was an interest rate adjustment or a payment adjustment or both. You know, consumers were responsible for determining, am I really going to be able to handle that payment increase when it happens? And not just focused on, okay, this is the loan that'll get me into the house, and that's all I care about.
Exactly.
So that's but in any event, well, there'll be an agency that's charged with preventing this from ever happening again.
Yeah.
Well, and Glenn, just to be clear, it's an additional regulator. I mean, their current regulator isn't going away. This is somebody in addition to who they'll have to be accountable to.
Exactly right. If you are an independent company that has FHA approval and you deal with Fannie and Freddie, for example, you'll still have Fannie, Freddie, and the FHA to deal with, and this regulator besides. If you're a bank and you're a large bank above $10 billion in assets, you'll have this regulator to deal with as well as your bank regulators.
Well, you know what? I think looking at what Joe was talking about in the opening segment this week, we're anticipating non-farm payrolls. You know, we heard about 100,000 people be employed by the Census Bureau. I wonder now if we're not going to see a growth in jobs just right within the federal government. We got a new bureau to fill and staff, so it may help us on the jobs front, but I don't like the fact that it's all coming from there. One of the most significant pieces of this legislation is, or this particular Senate bill, is the risk retention, and it has got everyone's attention in this industry. Glenn, what do you have as far as an update on the risk retention component of this?
Well, Dave, as you and your listeners are well aware, this is the component that would require that all mortgages that are sold as part of asset-backed securities, that there would have to be a risk retention equal to about 5% of the balance of the mortgage. And what the Senate bill provides is that 5% risk retention can be allocated between the originator of the mortgage and the securitizer, the actual issuer of the security. So we don't know how that's going to shake out. And the form of risk retention is left right now in the bill to the regulators. And the regulators that are charged with this section of the bill are the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the FDIC, which is the Deposit Insurance, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the entity that insures bank deposits. So these three will be making the determination on how risk retention gets allocated, what form risk retention will take. We don't know what form it's going to be. You know, everybody, including our members, have been assuming that they'll be required to hold an additional amount in capital on their balance sheet equal to 5% of the loans that they originate each year, which, of course, is going to be a really crushing burden when you think about it. But the regulators will have the ability to decide that what form it's going to take.
Wow. That piece of it right there is probably the most significant. And there's been no softening, at least you've not – based on our pre-program call, my understanding was you're not seeing any evidence of any softening of this skin in the game component. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct. What we and a coalition of lender groups have been advocating is that there be an amendment to this portion of the bill that would direct the regulators to create an exempt category of mortgages, provided that they met certain underwriting standards that the regulators can set. Excuse me, and the underwriting standards would include full documentation of the borrower's income and assets, no interest-only loans, no pay option arms, no negative amortization of any kind. And if it's an adjustable rate loan as opposed to a fixed rate, that there be annual and lifetime caps on the interest rate adjustment that can take place.
Joe, I think we have you back on the line. We got you reconnected to the program. This is going to have a significant impact on a number of your customers and those that are watching rate updates. Any thoughts?
Well, just think about, and Lynn, I'm sure that you and others have tried to communicate this, but we're a service industry, and a service industry that makes, you know, our margins are small, you know, a half a point to a point on a loan. And we have to hold 5% back just because we've provided that service, that absolutely will drop many, many people from participating in the industry, as well as you know, who wants to stay in if you're going to make one and have to put up five? How long can you do that? So, yeah, I think it would be a game changer for those who employ our subscribers, as well as those that you do work for, Dave. I mean, it will significantly impact how many people that are out there to serve customers.
And Glenn, has anybody put any numbers together on the consolidation of the industry, the job losses, all the impact as a result of that piece, if it were to stay without having some kind of very narrow applicable underwriting standard attached to it?
Yeah, the Mortgage Bankers Association has estimated that there'd be a minimum of 50,000 jobs lost in the industry as a result of
Wow.
the implementation of this standard. So when you think about that, we have a pretty good size industry, but we're not gigantic, and that would be a real body blow, 50,000 jobs lost.
Well, and does the MBA, again, I'd ask the question, who would stay in? I mean, even small banks are going to say, you know, a lot of the smaller banks do it as a service and not as an asset. It's kind of like the provision assumes that you hold the loans on your books, and holding 5% against your asset is not an extraordinary thing.
No, it's absolutely not, Joe, and you're entirely correct. What we have been trying to point out is that not only does it hit the independent mortgage banker, you know, non-bank lender, but it also hits small banks and it hits credit unions. And frankly, even for the big guys, though we're not really advocating for them because we don't represent the big lenders, but even for the big lenders, it really turns the economics of the mortgage business upside down and inside out. And I could very well see, if this gets implemented, several of the big banks looking at the mortgage business and saying, you know what, it requires just too much capital for us to operate, and we can't generate the kind of returns we want to see on our capital investments, so we're getting out.
You know, Joe has said, Joe, you said on our pre-call, you used the term, this is the mother of all unintended consequences. And
right.
I couldn't agree with you more. You hear on the news that people go, it's 1,500 pages. I don't know if we can get to the bottom of everything, but let's get something through. And this is that segment of that bill that is the unintended consequence that people seem to be able to go, okay, we'll fix it later. No, this is one that's got to get fixed ahead of time. So, Glenn, I know we were talking about the letter, what people can do, how they can write, what they should say in the letter, and you have a sample of that?
I do. And here's what we've done. We've put together a couple of page document that briefly explains the issue and then talks about, kind of gives a suggested outline of what you should put in a letter to your two senators about this issue. And basically what we're telling people is communicate with your senators. It's on the floor right now. And urge your senators to support an amendment that would permit soundly underwritten, low-risk loans to be exempt from these risk retention requirements. And be happy to send that out to anybody who asks for it. They can email me, Glenn, G-L-E-N, at mortgagepolicy.org, and I'll be happy to send them a copy of that document.
That's great. I think go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say that the definition of a soundly underwritten loan, I know we talked about this last time we were on, sounds kind of vague, and you kind of hate to put into the hands of those people that are going to interpret who, when you do and when you don't have to hold capital such a vague definition, but there's not much of a better way to do that, right? Because we don't know if Fannie and Freddie are going to be around, and, you know, clearly, you would exempt FHA VA loans, would you not? Well,
that's turned out to be, Joe, a surprisingly political issue.
You're kidding.
And it's actually I'm chuckling because it's kind of funny the reasoning. Initially we started talking about, well, gee, we should exempt Fannie and Freddie loans and FHA loans because, you know, the government has control over their standards. But the thinking was, boy, if you do that, you kind of lock in place the government agency share of the mortgage market right now, and that'll forever be a roadblock for the truly private segment of the mortgage market to come back. And so we have not been able to get people to really go along with that. We have an amendment. We're working very closely with a senator, a very prominent senator. And what this senator has told us is that they'd like to try and quietly get this change done through the committee. And have it included in an amendment that the chairman of the committee will offer on the floor. It's called a manager's amendment, where they make a number of non-controversial changes to the bill. And if that isn't possible, then this senator is prepared to offer it on the floor. And at that point, then we can kind of rally support around the amendment. And it'll specify that FHA and the Fannie Freddie regulator will be involved in setting these standards, and then it lists a number of items that should be in the standards.
That would be tremendous. I think what we should do is be paying attention and tracking that manager's amendment. I'd love to get that senator, if at all possible, Glenn, on the program so we can really get in and understand that. If that's possible, it's something we should talk about after the program. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief word, and we'll be talking more with Glenn Corso on the important topic of Senate Bill 3217, Restoring American Financial Stability Act. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending. We're talking to Glenn Corso about the potentially game-changing Senate bill. Is that the best way to refer to it? It is a Senate bill, is it not?
It is.
Okay, good. Senate Bill 3217, and we're talking about the most significant and unreported, other than on this program and some of our publications that are going on in the industry. Otherwise, it's fairly unreported about the consequences of the skin in the game legislation. We were talking about the manager's amendment, and then the senator you're working with, his willingness to bring it to the floor. What are the mechanics, Glenn, of bringing it to the floor? And it sounds like that's where we really can come behind this amendment and work effectively. Can you give us some insights of how we can track it? I know we'll be tracking on this program, but how others out can track this independent of our program? And then what should they be doing and when?
So the way to track it is really to keep a track of the amendments that are going to be offered to the bill. Those are posted on the Senate Banking Committee site, and okay. There, once you see an amendment go up that's labeled the Qualified Mortgage Amendment, that'll be the amendment that'll really contain the provisions that I outlined just a few minutes ago for your listeners. And essentially, the idea is that at some point during this debate, the sponsoring senator will be recognized on the floor, offer the amendment, talk about the amendment, and then we will. We've already been talking to a number of other senators to get support for this amendment. Several of the other senators would stand up and make supporting comments. And then really it'll be pretty critical to see how the chairman of the committee, Senator Dodd, reacts. If he's decided to oppose this amendment, then of course he'll make that clear in his comments. Or it could be that what we hope he'll do is he'll simply say, you know, this amendment is acceptable to us.
And
then they have a vote.
And then when we have addressed this with Senator Dodd, he seems to have blown off our concerns, if I understand correctly, that he has not been willing to really give this the consideration that is necessary.
Well, Dave, I don't think I'd go quite that far. He's been certainly willing to listen. But remember, Senator Dodd has the Obama administration kind of breathing down his neck.
Yeah.
And they are very focused on this. And to be honest, they're looking at this as an indirect mechanism for enforcing capital standards for non-bank lenders that aren't subject to a federal regulator. And we've pointed out to the administration, we've said, look, you have most mortgage bankers today are either FHA approved or they're
right.
approved to do business with Fannie or Freddie. All three of those are federal entities. FHA, of course, is an agency of the federal government, and Fannie and Freddie are under conservatorship. So how can you say you don't have control over the capital standards of non-bank lenders? And the response back to us has been, well, that may be true today, but hopefully
yeah.
there will be a private market, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, however long it takes. And at that point, we may see lenders, as we had in the past, that have no federal tie at all, and they'll simply, be subject to the state law of whatever state that they're located in.
All right.
So, Glenn, to me, all this sounds like the Obama administration will just as soon see there not be non-bank mortgage lenders and there not be mortgage securitization such that, you know, it's the old model where the bank makes the loan, leaves it on their books, because that's the only way you can retain the 5%.
Well, Joe, they say they don't want that, and that they do want a securities market, and they argue that that's the way to get private investors back into the game of being willing to invest in privately issued mortgage-backed securities is if you have risk retention so that you can argue to the investors, look, the originator and the securitizer, their interests are aligned with yours, Mr. or Mrs. Investor, because they stand to lose as well if a large proportion of these loans go bad.
Yeah.
I just get baffled as to how low of a, how far down the food chain, in a sense, they want these capital requirements to go. That, you know, okay, so if you're a large bank, yes, you have the privilege of FDIC insuring, and this was something we were listening to, you know, Warren Buffett talk a little bit about this morning as he was out this morning on CNBC. But you get to that point of which, if I'm a lender, I'm providing a service, I'm just following underwriting criteria, like you said, that Fannie and Freddie have established, that FHA have established, but I'm providing a service by being able to fund it myself and maybe be able to do some short-term or short-volume servicing. You know, how am I creating risk as an entity, if I'm that size company? How am I creating any kind of systemic risk that's going to be a problem in the housing market, you know, that's going to cause or change whether or not the housing market's going to collapse, right? Right? That's what they're trying to do, is eliminate the risks that caused the problems that occurred in the first place, or put
right.
some type of hedge.
Right. And I guess from their standpoint, at least, that they are taking the position, look, what we want is for the lenders to do their job. And we want the lenders to have a financial incentive in doing a good job. And in addition, if the lenders fail to do a good job, or they miss something, or whatever the case is, that we want them to have something at stake. And the discussion about capital standards really revolves around the idea that if lenders have to make good on their representations and warranties because they've made a mistake or failed in their oversight or whatever, that they actually have the capital available to make good on those reps and warrants. That's the argument we're getting back from them.
And to Alice's point earlier, we understand where this is coming from. And I think we have to, as we approach this, I mean, as ominous as this is, as a dark a cloud as this puts over our industry, I mean, from the smallest even up to the largest, to Joe's point, there's a lot of banks that are fairly well capitalized that are just not going to be able to sustain any kind of volume for any amount of time and if this goes through. But it really comes back to, let's get focused on what can we do to influence this. And then if we're successful, hallelujah, we've got ourselves this thing hopefully going in a better direction where the risk retention is reduced to only that, which is the more risky product. But if we are not successful, then, boy, I tell you, we've got to digest that, what that's going to mean to the industry. Let's get back to talking about what people can do. The listeners, we have listeners dialed in today, literally from coast to coast, Glenn. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening, being a part of this program each week. We are telling you, we're imploring each one of you to stand up and listen to what this discussion is. And now get that pen and paper out. Let's really get into it, Glenn, of what can people do to make a difference and the timing of it. What I thought I heard you saying a little bit earlier is there's this manager's amendment. Should we be writing now? Should we be just writing and barraging them with emails? Or is there a better time to do that? Help us through that one more time. I want to make sure it's crystal clear for every one of our listeners.
The time to take action is now, because we really can't wait, Dave. And what your listeners should be doing is, every state has two U.S. senators, and so your listeners need to figure out, okay, I live in California, for example. You have Senators Boxer and Feinstein. You should be writing to them, or actually emailing them, with using the talking points that we can provide. And essentially the talking points are, give them a quick outline of the issue, talk about the fact that S-3217 is on the floor, and that you very much want their support to exempt soundly underwritten low-risk mortgages from these risk retention requirements, and tell them what the impact could be potentially. Now, one thing that we haven't mentioned, and we really should, is we're urging everybody to start out talking about the potential impact on consumers, because that's one thing that, frankly, we're really baffled about as to why people are not being more responsive on this issue. There's a J.P. Morgan analysis that was done last December that indicated, between the accounting changes that have taken place regarding securitizations and the risk retention requirements, that mortgage interest rates could be driven up by as much as 300 basis points. So we're in a 5% market right now. We'd go to an 8% market when all this stuff goes into effect. Now, you can imagine how devastating that would be on consumers that are trying to buy a house, people who are trying to sell their existing home and perhaps move to somewhere else, job change or downsizing or whatever, and how disruptive that would be to consumers. Now, why the administration is just forging blindly ahead on this in the face of that kind of analysis, I can't explain it to you. But we're telling people you've got to focus on the consumer, because really on Capitol Hill, there's quite a few people who feel that mortgage lenders brought this mess on themselves. Not saying that's true, not trying to defend that point of view, but there's the sentiment up there. And so the best thing to do is not say, oh my gosh, this is going to put me out of business. I think that's worth mentioning for sure, and talk about the number of people employed in your company and what kind of impact that would have on the employment base. But the real focus has got to be on the consumer and how disruptive this could be to the mortgage market, to consumers' ability to access affordable mortgage financing, and more importantly, what this can do to the economy if in fact, the mortgage market goes back into a tailspin.
And Glenn, isn't the disruption really all we're doing now, like this J.P. Morgan Chase study you talked about, the Mortgage Banker study? These are just really assumptions that we can make as of the information that we know right now. This thing has not had any mechanics discussed. You know, Joe, you keep talking to that point. They haven't even figured out the mechanics of how this would work. You think about how do you calculate that capital if I have buybacks, if, you know, it just the true mechanics of not only getting it set up, but then how it works on an ongoing basis, that the unintended consequences are immeasurable right now. And just these few things we can get our hands on are impacting consumers.
Alice, you're exactly right about that. And I kind of circle back to Joe's math used earlier in the program, which is that if you're making 1% on the mortgage, how can you set 5% aside? So, you know, that math to me is very compelling. Now, it could be that risk retention will take a somewhat different form, that it would be less onerous for the industry to deal with. But at this time, I don't think we can really assume that. I think that we have to take the words that are written in the bill at face value, and when they talk about 5% risk retention, I think we have to assume that a lender, if you originate a $100,000 loan, that you have to add $5,000 to your capital when you originate and sell that loan as your risk retention piece. Now, if you think about the mathematics of that, boy, it doesn't take very many of those before many independent mortgage bankers, certainly most of the companies that we work with, that they couldn't do that anymore and they'd be out of business.
Well, I just think it's something that I hope everybody with what you've said so far has enough information to be able to put together a statement, or at least at the very least they know they can send an email to you to get a copy of what to send, and to just keep sending it and send it out to everyone that you know. Really make sure people get the word out for the proper wording. If you put in a lot of whining, it won't get any attention.
That's
I really want to stress that point that Glenn just made, that it's got to be about the consumer and finding those right hot button points that get their attention.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I was able to dial back in. Sorry, I got bounced out of the switchboard and had to dial back in. That's when the host gets bounced out of his own program. But one of the things I want to say that you're talking about writing your senators, for those that are lending in other states, there, I think the Scott Brown election proved one thing. You, even though you don't live in that state, you can have an impact on the local election. And I think you should be writing all the senators, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Glenn, but especially for those companies that are approved and licensed and doing making mortgage loans in each of these states. They should be writing those senators, even though that is not technically your representative. It's affecting that senator's constituents if they're not able to continue in the game. Is that, am I too far off on that they should be writing everybody?
No, not, Dave, you're exactly right about that. We, as you know, have about 35 members in our organization, all independent mortgage banking companies. Some of them do business in only two or three states. Others do business nationally. Others are very strong regional lenders. And what we've told our members is, in every state where you have some kind of a presence, we would urge you to write to the two senators from that state. Talk about your operation in that state, whether it's two officers or five offices or whatever it is, and just say, look, I employ people. And more importantly, talk about the number of borrowers that you've served over the past year or two to say, look, you're writing to, let's say, Colorado senators, and you say, I've made, 2,000 loans in Colorado over the last 3 years. We've helped put 2,000 families in homes. That's what's at stake for your constituents, is my ability to continue to do that kind of work in Colorado or whatever state you're discussing with the senator.
That is so important to realize. I like the one part is that how many loans have you made in that area? For those of you that are active in each one of these states, we should be telling that part of the story. I mean, give them metrics, give it to them. As Alice was saying, don't sound like the whiny, this is going to put me out of business. Quite frankly, I don't think they care if it's going to put some of you out of business. The reality is we've got to stand up and say what this is going to come back and how this is going to affect the consumers. Glenn, you've got a website that covers a lot of this. Could you go through this? I know you're putting information up there. Please cover that for us, please.
Oh, sure, yes. Our website, the link is www.communitymortgagebankingproject.com. And so you can go to that website. You can see the information that we have there about this issue. In fact, what I'll do, Dave, is that I'll get this document that I'm prepared to email out to people. I'll also get it posted there as well, so that they can download it from the website if they'd find that easier. And again, just to reiterate, my email address is Glenn, G-L-E-N, at mortgagepolicy.org, O-R-G.
And our producer has up on my screen the call to action on the risk retention. I appreciate you, Andy, doing that. There's some great information on Glenn's website. Go to it. I imagine it's probably one of the best places to go get an update. Glenn, tell the people what you're about. I mean, we appreciate what you're doing on the front lines of this, but the Community Mortgage Banking Project is substantially bigger than this. It's probably acting – this is probably front and center on your plate right now, but – just give a little insights to those of our listeners out there that might be wanting more information to what you are about and your organization is about.
Oh, sure, Dave. Thank you. We were founded about 9 months ago, and we are focused exclusively on representing independent mortgage banking companies in Washington, D.C., and advancing their interests both at the government level and with the media. So in addition to being a guest on your show that you've been so gracious to invite me on, we've also done a lot of work with the trade media, National Mortgage News and the American Banker and publications like that, and also with larger publications as well. We really felt that no one was telling the story about independent mortgage bankers from two standpoints. First, how important a link they are in the entire mortgage process, how they serve their local communities, serve borrowers in their communities. And, of course, most independent mortgage bankers don't have a household name like Wells Fargo or Bank of America. But Wells Fargo and Bank of America buy a heck of a lot of closed loans in their correspondent channel from independent community-based mortgage banking companies. So we wanted to tell the story about the borrowers that get served by this segment of the industry. Wanted to talk about the fact that many of the companies in this segment of the industry really didn't enjoy boom times in the 05, 06, and 07 time period because many of them didn't offer the pay option ARMs and the 228s and the other exotic products. And therefore, as FHA and Fannie and Freddie all saw their market share diminish during that time period, many of the independent mortgage banking companies really had the same kind of experience because they didn't want to get into products that they felt were really too, you know, unsustainable for borrowers. And as a result, now these companies are the survivors. They have come back as the more traditional actors in the mortgage industry have come back. They're very focused on serving the communities that they do business in and serving those borrowers. And we really put together an organization in order to tell their story in front of the Congress, government agencies, and the media.
Well, we are so grateful for what you're doing. And on behalf of all of our listeners, we've got a lot of feedback on today's program. Great. We got to have Glenn back. As several people, please have him back. Don't let it be so long. And so, Glenn, we're going to want to have you back. We've got 3 minutes left in the program today, and we want to cover a couple of other quick things about what's going on in the industry. There is a number of events that are going on. We have the National Secondary Marketing Conference coming up. We're going to be broadcasting at the end of this month from the floor of the National Secondary Marketing Conference. Is thanks to our friends at PMI, they're going to be opening the door for us to be able to do so. We would love to see you there and stop by and visit with us when we're there. We'll give you more information about that. Alice, where are you traveling off to this week? You going to be doing any more conferences? I know you're doing a lot of public speaking.
Well, yeah, actually, next week is the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Convention. They have a great lineup, and I'll be speaking there and covering several topics from compliance to mortgage fraud. But also at the same time, I guess I want to put in a plug for the mortgage bankers having a dual event. So the Government Housing Conference is going on at the same time at the same hotel as the Secondary Market Conference, and I'm going to be speaking there. We have a panel going on condo approvals for FHA and VA. So we'll be I'll see you out in New York.
Cool. Yeah, that's be good. I'd love to have a chance to get together with you. And, of course, we get the pleasure of having you visiting our fine state at the end of the month. Folks, there's so much going on. Get involved in your trade associations. Be involved. And if there is ever a time your voice needs to be heard, there's a balance to the story. There's a balance, and we've got to get that message out. We appreciate the opportunity for you being a part of the program each and every week. Be sure to pass this around to many of your friends, your friendly competitors, your trade association. We're all about bringing you the latest, most up-to-date information of what is going on in the industry. We have great guests like Glenn Corso. We have Mercy Jimenez about what's going on in the bonds. We have what's going on. We had Mitch Kider talking about the Department of Labor's rules and what's going on and how that conflicts or changes with what's going on and been widely reported by GMAC, ResCap. Folks, this is the place. We value your support. We love hearing from you, and we are setting our agenda for future programs based on your feedback. Please email me with your suggestions of what you'd like to have on a program as far as agenda items. Again, we encourage you to email Glenn Corso at glenn@mortgagepolicy.org. Go to his website. Again, the Glenn, that is mortgagepolicy.org. Is that correct?
No, it's www.communitymortgagebankingproject.com.
Oh, okay. Say, I've made the bad assumption. Thank you so much, folks, for being with us again this week. Alice, Joe, I appreciate so much what you're doing and being a part of this. Listeners, pass the word around. We're going to be back next week with an action-packed program of critical information that you just have got to hear. Thank you so much for being a part of the program this week, and we look forward to talking to you next week at the same time and same place. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.